Matthew 9. We'll be there in just a little bit. If you don't know what Awanas is, Awanas is a discipleship, we don't call it program, it's discipleship. In fact, that's what every one of us in this room, if you're a follower of Christ, you are a disciple, and you, hear me, you are to be discipling others. I didn't make that up. It's not a Baptist thing. It's a Christian thing. In fact, that's what Jesus talks about, and that's what we'll be looking at today. But discipleship. And so whenever you hear children's ministry, please do not default to child care. It is discipleship from the cradle to the casket. And some of y'all are getting there. And you need to be in discipleship before you get there. Was that too harsh? Okay, anyway. Deal is, folks, we are disciples. If you are a follower of Jesus, you're a disciple. You will never know the joy of Christian living unless you're investing in other people so that their walk with Christ is growing. So Jesus, that's what he's doing. All through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that is what the Gospels are about. Yes, they are about what Jesus has done through his redemption. It is about his life. But you have to look at it also that he spent those years, the last remaining years that he had here on earth, investing in some men that they would carry on what he was doing. He was making disciples so that they would continue to make disciples. And that's what you and I are to be doing as well. And if you want to know what it looks like to be a disciple and to make disciples, all you have to do is look at Jesus' life. Because all the time he is investing, everything he is doing, he is allowing his disciples to see it, to hear it, to witness how he's doing it, and then he begins to kind of hand it over to them. So thus far, we have seen Jesus heal people. His disciples saw that. He calmed storms. They got to see that. He took care of supernatural beings. They got to see that. Then they got to see hard-hearted people, how they would respond to, like, hear this man who was full of demons delivered, and yet they were more concerned about the pigs than they were this man who had been delivered from demons. And all along, Jesus is wanting his disciples to see it and to kind of see what's going on. But here, don't miss this. He is also wanting them to begin to be, in this word, more self-aware of their own hard-heartedness. He wanted them to be self-aware. You know what that is? To be self-aware. It's kind of like if you have a really good friend that comes up to you and goes, hey, listen, you whine too much. And you go like, what are you talking about? Man, I've never complained a day in my life. And they go, you whine too much, okay? Now, that's a really good friend who will do that. But being self-aware is you're being aware of your own heart, about how you're thinking, about how you're seeing people. I want to give you just a couple of phrases that for me have been very challenging. In fact, they're not only challenging to me, but I think for me personally, they're helping me grow. And here's these two statements, all right? First of all, time erodes awareness. If you don't know what this means, I just want you to think about it a little bit. If over time you are still doing like the same job and there's not someone kind of encouraging you or evaluating or like kind of asking you questions, what'll happen in your job, in your home, in your marriage, in your parenting, in your Christian walk, time erodes awareness. You're just not aware anymore of maybe things you're doing or not doing. Because over time, it erodes awareness. You know what I'm talking about? In your own marriage, If you don't do things different, if you don't take opportunity, if you don't celebrate anniversaries, I'm really meddling now. But if you don't do those things, what happens is over time, it just erodes awareness. Your marriage just kind of gets stalemate because time erodes awareness. But time also erodes awareness in your own Christian walk. In fact, you can come to church here every Sunday morning, sit in the same place, and that's okay if you want to sit in the same place, all right? But you can come sit in the same place, and time erodes awareness. Because you can think that coming and sitting in these pews on a Sunday morning, that is your Christian service or duty. And so you can come and then leave and think, man, I'm good until next week when I come and sit in that same place and do the same thing. And yet time can erode awareness. Here's another one. Complacency is difficult to see in the mirror. Over time, if I don't watch it, I will become complacent in my life. And the thing is, if I'm looking in the mirror, if I have no one else, in fact, hear me. What's the Word of God called? It's called a mirror. Right? If you do not continually look into this mirror, you will become complacent. If you do not have a good friend, now hear me, a good friend will tell you if you're complacent. You will want that kind of friend in your life. In fact, every one of us ought to want people in our lives who go, hey, listen, because I love you so much, you have become complacent in this area. Now, here's not a good friend. Just let you keep on, keep on, keep on, and never call anything out in your life. And so here's Jesus. He is taking these guys who over time have eroded. Awareness in their own hearts has eroded. They've grown up like in the Jewish community. They've heard the law of God like maybe all of their life, some of them. And yet, over time, it is just eroded. They've become complacent. And so he calls these guys, and he's taking them, and he never wastes a moment. In fact, I want you, if you will, there in Matthew, if you will, chapter 9, I want you to look at a verse, all right? Starting in verse 9. As Jesus went from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. He said to him, follow me. And Matthew got up and followed him. So I have a question. I've already given away, but here's the question. At this time in history, who is the most hated member of the Jewish society, even more than any Roman soldier, who would torment them day in and day up? Tax collectors. Why is that? A tax collector was a Jew who was a traitor to his own people. And he would buy into the Romans, and the Romans would give him security so that he could overtax his own people, and his own people couldn't do anything about it because he had the Roman government, the Roman army behind every decision he made. And so you could be walking down the road, and if you walk by a tax collector's booth, he could say, come over here, what's your name? Have you paid your tax for whatever reason? And overtax his own people. He was a traitor. In fact, there was no one hated more in that day than a tax collector. In fact, here's just history tells us something about him. Tax collectors were not allowed to testify, to be a witness in the Jewish court. Why? You're considered a traitor, a liar. Who could ever believe you? And so you could never come to the defense of anyone after you became a tax collector. In fact, you were forbidden to worship in the temple or any synagogue. Maybe you grew up in a Jewish home. Maybe you always went to the synagogue. But once you became a tax collector, you were shunned. You lost all your friends. In fact, the only friends you had were other traitors, tax collectors, who had traded their own people, betrayed their own people, so that they could gain more and more and more. So just in your imagination, can you imagine being with Jesus and you're following him, and as you walk by a tax collector's booth, this person probably has already overtaxed you who knows how many times. And Jesus says to this guy, follow me. Do you think that was just like Jesus was just looking for someone that day? Like just anybody, you know? And, oh, here's a guy. Let's just call him to join these guys that he's probably already overtaxed. In fact, when they walked by, what do you think the disciples saw? When they saw Matthew, the tax collector, what did they see? How did they react? What was in their hearts? Were they self-aware of what was going on inside of them? Were they self-aware of the hatred they had for that person? How they despised that person? How maybe the day before or so, he came along and he taxed us on the catch that we had just caught. We'd worked all night to gather all these fish up to sell for our own livelihood. And yet he's taken most of it because he's a crook. What did they see? Now, I want you to listen, okay? I'm going to read verse 9 again, and then I just want to read it from two other accounts, Mark and Matthew. And I want you to see if you can hear anything different, okay? So here's Matthew, all right? He writes, as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. Here's Mark. Mark says, and he walked along, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him. And Levi got up and followed him. Now here's Luke. After this, Jesus went out and he saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. Follow me, Jesus said to him. Did you hear any difference? Kicker, our youth pastor, and our students who go every year to Camp Barnabas have taught me an incredible lesson. Did y'all know that? You guys have taught me an incredible lesson. When you go to Barnabas, after a little bit, you start becoming more self-aware how you say things. For myself and for a lot of people, it's just kind of the default to say that disabled child. But I have learned to say that child with a disability. Hear the difference? In fact, I have a friend for 10 years. I brought him to church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday. He was bound to a wheelchair. One day he said, hey, listen. He says, all of us have disabilities. You can just see mine easier than yours. And here's the deal. You don't even really have to say disabled, right? Did you hear it, what Matthew said? When Matthew wrote, when Jesus saw him, what did he say? He saw a man. What did the disciples see? They saw a tax collector, a traitor, someone who deserved to go to hell. When Jesus saw Matthew, he saw a man. He saw someone created in God's image. This is not all that it means, but here's kind of maybe a skeleton of what does it mean that every person in this room and every person that you and I will ever see the rest of our life, when we see them, what are we supposed to see? What does God want us to see? Does he want us to see a tax collector, a person of another race, someone who's a different color, someone who believes different than we do, someone who believes something absolutely opposite of what you and I believe, someone from a different country, Or does he want us to see a man or a woman who's made in the image of God? What does that mean? So here's just maybe a skeleton of what it means just a little bit, right? First of all, for a person to be made in the image of God means that when God created mankind, men and women, hope you heard that, men and women, what he did is he made us relational beings. What's that mean? It means that he gave us the capacity to want and long for and desire to have relation with other people, to have friends, to be loved and to love other people, to know God personally and to love others, right? But when sin came in, what did that do? All right, I put it up here. When sin came, it first of all broke the relationship between God and man, right? Every person that you will ever see came into the world with a broken relationship with God. But not only that, but a bruised, maybe would be one way to say it, relationship with other people. Every one of us in this room, because of sin and what we sang about this morning, not only is it offensive to God, but it damages our relationships with one another. In our families, with one another, hear me, with people we've never even met before, we can see them on TV and hate them. Because why? They're from somewhere else. And yet we've never met them. But yet, the deal is, it breaks and it bruises relationship. So the deal is every person in this room, God has designed you to long for relationship with Him and with other people. Not only that, when God designed you and I, He made us rational beings. Now, this is remarkable to me. See, rational means that He gave us the capacity to be able to reason and to think. Can you imagine what it was with Adam and Eve before sin came into the world? That their reasoning and their thinking was without sin, and so everything they thought, everything they kind of came up with, was not tainted or darkened by sin. But yet, every one of us, when we come into the world because of sin, all of us, our thinking is darkened. It is tainted by sin. It is messed up by sin. And over, if something does not happen, what happens? Sin just causes our thinking to become more and more and more corrupt. In fact, not only that, we become lie believers. Just think about here, Adam and Eve, they have fellowship with God in the garden, and they hear Him telling them the truth all the time. But yet one day they are tempted, and in their sin, they would rather believe the lie of the enemy of God than the truth of God who had provided and given them life and all of that. In fact, here's a passage in Romans chapter 1. For although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they became futile. It means they became twisted in their thinking. Their thinking that really God wanted it to be useful. And yet it became useless. It became vain. It became darkened, it says, and in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. And so every person that you and I, including you and I, are thinking apart from Christ is darkened, and we can be lie believers. Here's another one. You and I are volitional beings. Volitional means that you and I have the capacity to make decisions. Before sin, can you imagine? Every decision Adam and Eve made had no sin in it. They never had a selfish decision. They were always other people centered. They were always looking out for the other. They were always looking out for the honor of God. But yet when sin came into the world, what happened? All their decisions became selfish. In fact, I hate to really tell you this because I don't want to bum you out, but I just came home last night with my family from Colorado. It was 35 degrees at night. We had to get real close to the campfire In fact, I on purpose didn't take a bath this morning so I could still smell the campfire. We camped by a creek. It came out of the mountains, and at nighttime it'd sing you to sleep. It was awesome. Do you know what camping will do to you? It'll do the same thing as marriage, having children. It shows you how selfish you are. When you go camping, and I think every one of you ought to go, because camping will show you how selfish you are. I'm talking about myself. Been camping all my life. This was our 28th year as a family to go to Colorado. You know what camping does? It shows you how selfish you are. You don't have the convenience. And so you'll do something not thinking of somebody else so that your comfort can be, you know, good. And yet they're not comfortable, but hey, I'm going to do whatever I can to be comfortable. You know what marriage does to you? It causes you to see how selfish you are. If you are not self-aware, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, you're selfish. Because your marriage, your parenting, in fact, everything in life that causes any uncomfort will cause selfishness just to rise. Take care of self. It doesn't matter what happens to anyone else or how it affects anyone else, as long as young people going to Mission Arlington and Camp Barnabas is some of the greatest stuff that could ever happen in your life and mine. You know why? Because it takes selfishness and it just pushes it up to the top. And you realize how selfish I am. So not only that, but here's another one. God made you and I to be emotional beings. In fact, emotional meaning that it would enhance your experience in life. That's why God gave you and made you to be an emotional person. It's kind of like if your husband or your wife said to you, just think, if God did not make you an emotional person, and your wife or your husband said to you, I love you, and yet you had not the capacity to be able to feel that, well, hey, okay, whatever, you know, it wouldn't. But the deal is, God made us to be emotional so that whenever something happens, and hear me, not just love, but whenever pain of somebody else, that you can feel that. You know what I'm talking about? And as a believer, it's an incredible gift. Because when you and I see someone suffering and hurting, what happens? God takes that part of us that we can feel with them. We can see that. We can ache with them. And it moves us to do something. But when sin comes along, you know what sin does to emotions? Instead of it being enhancing, it can make it destructive. Just make it destructive. In fact, here's a statement. I don't know who said this, but this is absolutely true. God meant for emotions to be like a servant to you and I. But hear me. If you allow emotions to be your master, it will be horrible. And so the deal is because of sin, oftentimes we can allow the emotions to run our lives. Now, without just taking that list and looking at it again, I want you to just kind of visualize it. He made you and I to be relational with Him and other people. He made you and I to be able to think. He made you and I to be able to make decisions. He made you and I emotional, that it would enhance our lives and even other people's lives. But if you and I do not watch out, we will not live in this order. We will allow our emotions to be number one. And then we will allow our emotions to make our decisions. We will adjust our thinking to fit with that. And then whatever the relationship is, just deal with it, right? Because I'm going to live off of how I feel, not off of my relationship with God. And loving one another, and thinking what God wants me to think, and making decisions that honor Him and bring good to other people. and allowing my emotions to move me to love and care for other people. So whenever these disciples saw Matthew, they probably thought he's like the worst guy we've ever seen in our lives. Now I want you to hear the statement. Not everybody without Christ is as bad as they could be. You know what I'm saying? You know, before you were a believer, some of you in this room, you were not as bad as you could have been. All of us know people that, man, they're like bad. I mean, like, wow, I would never do anything like that. So the deal is, Matthew might not be as bad as he could be. But here's the statement I want you to really hear. Without Christ, Matthew and every one of us are as bad off as we could be. Does that make sense? Without Christ, every person you and I know, if they're without Christ, they might not be as bad off. I mean, as bad, right? In fact, there are many. There's a survey not too long ago around Christian circles. It is in the high above 50% of people who call themselves believers that do not believe that a person will go to hell without Christ. They say there is no way God could send someone to hell. There is an average above the 50% mark, in circles of believers in the United States, that believe there are other ways to get to God other than Jesus, saying no way God would just give one way to get to himself. He would give many ways so that many different types of people could get to him. And so they believe there's no way. And so sometimes, and if you or if I am going to be a part of that, we would look at someone and say, well, they're not that bad, and so God is going to go ahead and just let them into heaven. You know, there's many roads to heaven, some people say. And yet the truth is that a person without Christ is as bad off as they could be. Hear me. You and I, as a believer, what you and I experience in this life is the worst we will ever experience. And I'm not downplaying it, but if you're here in this room and you're a believer and you're going through a hardship that like you've never felt before in your life, we sympathize for you. But hear me, that's the worst you are ever going to experience. But for a non-believer, what they experience in this life is the best they will ever experience. Money, wealth, fame, position, whatever, it is the best they will ever experience in this life. Because what comes next look if you verse 9. I just want to read the whole context. As Jesus went from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at a tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. Do you know that when he got up and followed him, he could never go back to that life again? He could never go back to collecting money. He could never, the Romans would never let him come back. They knew he was a traitor for betraying his own people to become a tax collector. But when he left the tax collector's office, now he's got the whole Roman government after him because he has betrayed them. They no longer are going to get money from him. They're no longer going to get things that they couldn't get. And so now he's a traitor to them. And yet Matthew had no friends because when he holds a party in his house, who are the people that come? Other tax collectors, prostitutes, and sinners. It's only people he knows. It's the only company, companionship that he has. And he gets up and he follows him. What do you think the disciples were thinking? What are you thinking, Jesus? Why would you ask this person to come and join in our little club? Why would you allow him to be part of the thing that we got going? You know, me and Jesus got our own thing going, and now you've invited this guy to come in to be a part of us. You want us to camp out with him? You want us to follow you around with this guy beside us? You want to do in his life what you're doing in our life? It says that Jesus reclined at the table of the house. Behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Now, before we read verse 12, can you imagine if God allowed the disciples to answer that? I don't know why. I don't know why Jesus would ask him to come and join our crowd. I didn't like it either. Just like you, I don't like it. I don't like what Jesus is doing either. I wish he would kick that guy out. But before they could answer, Jesus said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick." Now, I just want you to think for a moment. Oftentimes when you read this, you think he is saying it just so that the Pharisees can hear it, right? But who else is there? His disciples. Jesus is letting him hear it, the same thing he's saying to the Pharisees. It would almost be like, "Hey, Peter, those who are well, they don't need a physician. Hey, Andrew, those who are well, they don't need a physician. But those who are sick." He says, "Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. For I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." The thing is, you and I are disciples. If you are a follower of Christ, you are a disciple. And one of the things you can count on and I can count on is that Jesus is wanting you and I to become more self-aware of what's in our hearts and what we see when we look at other people. You know, I've done this probably, it's been several weeks ago, but it's interesting as you read through the Gospels, you kind of come to the same kind of theme again. And the thing is that God takes us through lesson after lesson, and sometimes it's the same lesson over and over again, just kind of in a different situation, because he wants us to see it, this one more thing again that maybe is really rooted in our hearts. And so for those disciples that day, and honestly for you and I, and I'll just say for me, when I look at someone, what do I see? Do I see color? I have a 3-year-old granddaughter, and she goes to Sunday school at another church. And she came out the other day, and she said that her and named her little friend, they're twins because they had the same hairdo. Her little friend is a different color. My 3-year-old granddaughter does not see colors. Hear me, she's not colorblind. She's not colorblind yet. My 3-year-old granddaughter does not see race. I can't see my notes. When you and I look at someone, do we see someone who's rich? Sometimes we can either see someone who's rich and despise them. They don't deserve that. Or we see someone that's rich and go, man, I need to know that person. When we see people, do we see them as poor? Put together? Not so put together. Jesus, when He wants to develop in us, when we see a man and a woman, we see someone made in the image of God, and without Christ, the most tragic thing is that they have a broken relationship with Him. They need someone to share their life with them and the gospel. If you are a follower of Christ, our relationship with God has been restored, and it's still growing. Our relationship with others is not perfect, but it needs constant grace towards one another. Our thinking at times is still goofy. That's just a nice way of saying it. Our choosing can still be selfish, but must be aimed at becoming other-centered. Our emotions can still be like a roller coaster, but we need the Spirit of God to take our emotions, that they could be used to enhance our care and love for other people. I have one point this morning. When we look at someone, what do we see? Would you bow your head with me? Close your eyes for a bit. You do with that what you will. Jesus wants you and I to become more and more self-aware of our heart condition, how we're thinking. If you want to know where you need to grow, just look at those places in your relationship with the Lord, with other people, in your thinking, in your choosing. Where are your emotions? Who's controlling them? Are you allowing them to be your master? May God give us, every one of us, a heart that when we see someone, we don't go, oh, there's a tax collector. Oh, there's a person of a different color. There's someone of a different race. Jesus, may you help us when we see someone. See a man. We see a woman. We see a little boy. You see a little girl. They need you. And they need someone to come alongside them and help them to know you and help them to grow. When you hear about a particular ministry, I've done this. I just disregard it. I've been so unself-aware of my own heart condition, I just disregard it. Somebody else will do that. Somebody else will go take care of those kids. I've already done that. My time's over. I'm going to let somebody else do that. You and I are disciples and followers of Christ. We are to help others know and follow Christ, no matter what their age, color, race, lot in life. Jesus, start with me.
than you already have. More than anybody else in this room. Change my heart. Help me when I see people. They don't see a title, a condition, a performance. They don't see their color. I see him, someone who is made in your image and needs to know you. Needs to know you better if they are a believer. I pray that you'd fill us with your Spirit. God, we would look and we'd be involved in other people's lives. Our life is short here on earth. Here we're starting in the book of James, and we're going to hear over and over again, our life is but a vapor. Help our vapor count in this life. So Jesus, in our time of response, may it be more response. God, back to you in our own hearts. I ask this in your name. Amen.